Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. The marshal may do the opening cry.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Johnson, Judge Hooten, Judge Sleater, the Honorable Matthew E. Johnson presiding.
Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. For the sake of the audio record, today's date is January 6, 2021. We are hearing arguments this afternoon, oral arguments in three cases, and we also are considering two cases that are being submitted without oral arguments, solely on the briefs. The first case set for oral argument is number A20-862, ProStar Exteriors versus Alan Walker and another. Counsel, our rules for oral argument are similar, but transferred to this virtual Zoom environment. And so each of you will have 15 minutes for your primary argument. Appellant's counsel will have an opportunity for rebuttal of up to 5 minutes. I think if you maintain the right settings, you can see the time clock on your screen. And so counsel for appellant, Mr. Dwyer, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. Opposing counsel, may it please the court. My name is Emmerich Dwyer. I represent Appellant ProStar Exteriors LLC in this matter. We are asking the court today to reverse the order of the district court in limiting the fees awarded to appellant and to remand with instruction for the court to award attorney's fees for all phases of the litigation, including trial and post-trial matters, to instruct the court to apply all Jadeen factors to determine the reasonableness of the fees claimed, and not to give essentially sole and substantial weight to the concept of proportionality in making that determination, and finally, to instruct the district court that there is no limit or ceiling on the fees that can be sought under Minnesota Chapter 514 as part of a mechanics lien proceeding. Put simply, Your Honors, in reviewing the district court orders and in reviewing opposing counsel's brief, I am unable to say what it is that appellant or my law firm should have done differently or should not have done to achieve the same result that we did.
Well, how about using fewer lawyers and fewer paralegals and fewer law clerks?
Your Honor, there's been much made about the six lawyers used at the firm. And with all due respect to my colleagues, of those six, one billed $0 in time. She wrote her time off. The other two billed a very minuscule amount of time as they were consulted on certain subject matter experts. They were not working the case, they simply were consulted. The third, Jeff O'Brien, did the intake and initial paperwork. And when it became apparent this matter was going to litigation, he handed it to my colleague, Jennifer Crancer. Ms. Crancer took this matter all the way to trial and would be before you now, except that she then went on maternity leave and I picked up the file for post-trial motions. So while it's easy for the other side to point fingers and say there were six of you, in fact, there was only one lawyer working on the file at any given time.
Whenever the case is transferred from one lawyer to the next, there's inevitably some time spent in the transition, right?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And we did, as part of the submission of fees to the district court, write off any file review transition time prior to submitting fees to the district court. So those were already struck.
Going back to your prior question, rhetorical question perhaps, but I have answers. What about filing this claim in conciliation court?
There are two issues with that. First of all, mechanics liens claims can only be brought as a district court action. The conciliation courts lack the authority and the power to enforce mechanics liens and enforce mechanics liens rights.
But that was not the theory on which you prevailed, correct? You prevailed on a simple breach of contract claim based on the contract, not, am I, if I, well, go ahead.
I'm afraid that's not correct, Your Honor. The district court did originally only award relief on a breach of contract claim. However, in subsequent post-trial motions, the district court amended its findings of fact to also award judgment on the mechanics lien claim, which, as we go to the post-trial motions, the district court judge declined to award any fees for those post-trial motions, despite the fact that the district court admittedly made an error in
So what was the benefit of getting a judgment on the mechanics lien matter?
The mechanics lien judgment secures any eventual payment against the property. Put simply, a conciliation court judgment is fine, but it's difficult to enforce. A mechanics lien judgment allows you to secure the property on which you did work as an eventual backstop for payment should the judgment debtor not pay. It gives mechanics lien holders additional guarantees for payment. The problem that most of these lien holders have, as is the case here, they do work for a modest amount of money, and it's pretty easy for someone to jump out on those modest bills and run off and never pay. The mechanics lien statute was expressly written with the intention of giving an additional guarantee to persons who improve or supply materials to improve real property, which is what happened here.
And I guess my question is more in the nature of, I understand the lien existed. It was filed, I believe, before the law, or at least before the trial. I'm unclear about the benefit of getting a district court judgment on the mechanics lien rather than just say, you know, a money judgment from conciliation court on the contractual obligation, which could have been removed to district court for enforcement, could it not?
It could not have been, Your Honor. First of all, the conciliation court could award a money judgment, but could not award a mechanics lien judgment. If it were removed to district court solely for enforcement, it would only be enforced as a money judgment, which you cannot foreclose against most properties. And I shouldn't say, which you cannot foreclose against homesteads or other properties, and which falls subsequent to any mortgage holders or lien holders. A mechanics lien allows you to foreclose the property and allows you to gain priority over other potential lien holders, mortgage holders, et cetera. So it's a much more advantageous position. I don't believe the owners and encumbrances on this particular property are in the record for the present, but I would suspect that if I were to attach a money judgment to it, that judgment would not be paid as part of a sale of this property.
Mr. Dwyer, question I have, I'm directing your attention to the court's order, and I'm asking it in response to a comment you made, and I think I saw it in the briefing about the basis for the judge's decision, but in paragraph number 28, and so that's after the court had explained how it went through the Jadwin factors, reduced the judgment or the legal fees from that point down to $15,540. And then in paragraph 28, the court says, while the court in its discretion could in its discretion award up to $15,540 in attorney's fees, the court must also consider all the factors outlined above. And then in the second last sentence of that paragraph, due to the factors strongly favoring reduction in fees, the court will reduce the fees to $5,000. When I'm looking at that, my question, Mr. Dwyer, is how do we conclude there was an abuse of discretion? I think the phrase you used, that there was an undue emphasis on proportionality, but doesn't that tell us that the court used the same Jadwin factors in reducing it yet again, which the court, of course, has the discretion to do?
The court has the discretion to apply the factors, but here the court did not go through the process of actually applying them. As laid out in our brief, with most of the factors, what the district court kept coming back to is saying, well, it's a small amount in controversy, so this factor will weigh in favor of respondent. The district court did not identify the facts that it was using, with limited exception, did not identify many particular facts that it was basing the reduction of fees on. Can I stop you there?
Because I know you argued this in your briefing, but if I go to the addendum page 14, starting finding 16, and it goes through, it looks like through 24, it looks like the court applied each and every Jadwin factor. I'm not sure on what you're basing your argument that the court didn't apply those factors.
There's two steps here. I'd like the court to recognize that what the district court did was it engaged in three separate acts of reduction, if you will. First, it did apply the Jadwin factors to the amounts requested for certain phases of the litigation, and it went through that. And as laid out in the brief, the problem is for many of those Jadwin factors, the court didn't say, these are the facts on which I'm basing this decision. The court said, it's all about the amount in controversy. It's about the proportionality. The court then, after applying those Jadwin factors to certain phases, said, without applying any of the Jadwin factors, saying, I'm not going to award fees and costs for litigation, for trial or post-trial motions. Again, without a citation as to here's why, here's the factors, the reasons I believe I should, nothing. And then the court engaged in a second reduction of the amount that it had already done, saying after applying all the factors above and reaching that $15,000 number, I'm then going to knock it down to 5,000. So the court went through the analysis once, reached 15,000, and then in summary fashion, without any further analysis, knocked off two more substantial chunks of bills. Trial takes time. Post-trial motions were necessary, as the court admitted it had made an error, and then knocked it down again without any further analysis, just simply referencing the Jadwin factors. And that again comes back to, I don't know what we should have done differently in light of the defendant's intransigence. They made a full-throated defense on all these claims. They raised a number of factual allegations in their defenses that needed to be addressed. My client was presented with the option of simply walking away multiple times, which was not acceptable. They owed some money. And the district court then penalized my client for, first of all, insisting that they should be paid, and the district court agreed that the facts fully supported the claim for payment. And second, for insisting on its legal rights that some amount of attorney's fees be paid as the litigation was progressing.
Are you claiming that this is a legal, that the court erred as a matter of law, or that this is an abuse of discretion?
Your Honor, the standard for review on three of the four issues we raised is abuse of discretion, and that's the standard this court usually applies. But it is an abuse of discretion to arbitrarily reduce the amount of fees or to arbitrarily remove whole sectors of litigation that were necessary and performed without factual basis as to why they were removed, without legal precedent as to why they were removed. The district court essentially said, after applying the Jadwin factors, you're not going to get a majority of your fees because I don't think you should get them. And also I'm reducing the fees I already gave you. And discretion does have its limits. My apologies, Your Honor.
Well, I'm just looking here. I mean, you're making the assumption that the court applied the Jadwin factors and then made the reduction to $15,540. And then made a further reduction to 5,000. I mean, looking at the order, couldn't it just as reasonably be argued that the court, in applying the Jadwin factors, did its analysis of what it thought was reasonably charged and reasonably charged, but in applying the Jadwin factors, came up with the final analysis of $5,000 because basically the case was way overworked with the amount in controversy, and these the court had some concerns about whether these people had the financial resources to pay it. And they were losing their house as a result of not their inability to pay it. I mean, why is that analysis an abuse of discretion?
Because the Jadwin factors do not allow the court to apply one factor, in this case, the proportionality factor, in lieu of all others. And furthermore, it really goes against the purpose of the statute, the stated purpose of the statute, which is to allow lien holders to collect on amounts owed. Here, the district court found that there was no merit to the defenses raised by the respondents and that they were not credible in their testimony. My client had a very valid claim, had a strong basis to assert that claim, and had a strong basis to stand by its rights.
Isn't there also case law saying that courts should be cautious in applying the statute so as not to discourage customers, homeowners from asserting their contractual rights as well?
From asserting valid concerns, yes, Your Honor. The concerns here were not valid and after trial were found not to be valid. And
there are a number of cases in which the appellate courts have either reduced awards so that they approximate or are less than the recovery, or perhaps appellate courts affirm district court awards that are within, where the attorney fees, under this statute, where the attorney fees are within the scope of the recovery on the claim. Do you have any case law where the appellate courts have affirmed an award that's greater than the recovery, or have reversed an award that's less than the recovery and order the district court to award more than the recovery?
Under the 514 structure, no, Your Honor. There aren't cases that I'm aware of where the district court has reduced more. And I apologize, Your Honor. I see that my time is up. May I continue to answer?
Yes, please go ahead and finish your answer.
Thank you. However, I will point out, as was mentioned in our brief, that those cases are from 3 to 4 decades ago, when the costs of legal work and the costs of construction are very different than they are today. And that, frankly, when the district court proceedings could be done in a more economic fashion. And that's not an option that is available to any litigant today. Save for perhaps the rocket docket. So the 5,000 for 5,000 rule would have a substantial chilling effect on any mechanics lien claimant. With that, Your Honors, again, we'd ask that the court reverse the holding of the district court.
Thank you, Mr. Dwyer. You will have an opportunity for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Maria Brecky, representing Alan and Nina Walker, respondents in this case. This case involves an area of law where district court judges have substantial discretion, and the district court's determination is a finding of fact that will be upheld unless it is clearly erroneous. There are cases where trial courts abuse their discretion, but this is not one of them. The district court here made specific findings on all 9 Jadwin factors, and it found that 6 of those factors favored respondents. Conversely, it found that only 1 favored appellant. The district court also properly considered 2 other principles as instructed by case law from this court and the Minnesota Supreme Court. First, to approach attorney fee awards with caution so that property owners are not discouraged from challenging defective workmanship. And second, to ensure that the award bears a reasonable relation to the amount of judgment secured. The damages in this case amounted to about $4,400. Despite that, appellant claims that it is entitled to $39,900 in attorney's fees. That is 9 times the actual damages in this case.
Well, can I stop you? Because one of the arguments made is the court here did not allow any attorney's fees for the trial or the post-trial purpose or the post-trial period. I mean, is that an arbitrary ruling? Is there some reason why the court should be able to just ignore the incurrence of attorney's fees that were basically required because your client made all these allegations for non-payment?
Your Honor, the appellant argues that the district court arbitrarily disallowed those fees for the trial and post-trial period, but that argument does ignore the district court's specific findings that the exorbitant fee claims made was a key reason that the case did not settle. And also, the district court went through the Jadwin factors in determining the amount here, and the award of attorney's fees and the amount of those fees is in the discretion of the district court.
Well, but I'm looking at finding 27. That's on the addendum, page 18. And it just says the court will not consider these attorney's fees. Is there a legal basis for that or some kind of rationale for that?
Your Honor, I apologize. I'm not, I don't have the specific paragraph written down, but within the order, the district court did say that the high fees charged were a key reason that the case went to trial at all. And that was the reason that the court did not award fees for the trial and post-trial period.
Okay.
And I apologize that I don't have that number in front of me of the paragraph.
What evidence was that based on? Did the Walkers testify about the reasons why they didn't settle? Was that part of the evidence at trial?
I'm not sure, Your Honor. Okay. Actually, Your Honor, it's in the affidavit.
In the motion practice. Okay, thank you.
I'd like to take just a few moments to address a few of the points Mr. Dwyer made. His first rhetorical question of what their client and what they should have done. He explained the six lawyers that were working on the case, but the record also shows that there were six staff working on the case, three law clerks and three paralegals. That's 12 people overall. And I think that amount just shows that they were not taking into account the amount at issue in conducting their billing. In addition, appellant's own actions caused the excessive attorney's fees in several places during the litigation. First, in bringing a meritless priority claim through which they were trying to establish the lien that would take priority over the mortgage lender. Appellant's trial counsel, discussed that claim with them several times before finally bringing a summary judgment motion on that claim, at which point appellant finally withdrew it. And that undoubtedly led to an increase in fees for bringing that meritless claim. In addition, although appellant claims that the discovery in this case was necessary and also that the Walkers refused to engage in discovery, neither of those claims are supported by the record. Appellant served six sets of discovery on the Walkers, including 120 requests for information, which is a lot of discovery for a case worth only $4,000. And the discovery itself was extremely broad. For instance, it asked about whether the Walkers had been involved in a workers' compensation case in the last 10 years, which is not relevant to the dispute. And before the Walkers responded to the discovery, their counsel communicated with appellant's counsel, suggesting that the parties proceed with informal discovery because that seemed to make more sense for a case of this size and nature. And appellant's counsel refused that suggestion, at which point the Walkers did respond to discovery and engage in the discovery process. The district court did
Ms.
not
Brecky,
make it. Oh, yes.
Rick, I want to hone in a little bit on Mr. Dwyer's comment. It seems like a fair reading of the order that the court gave a disproportionate, if I might, weight to a proportionality of the award. And I say that by reviewing the order. If you on paragraph 25, and this is after the Jadwin factors, the court says when comparing all the relevant factors, the court finds that the factors weigh in favor of defendant and will review and adjust the attorney's fees. And then in 26, the court can only find that $15,540 is an appropriate sum to be awarded. So then goes through all the reductions of that. And then we already talked about paragraph 28, where all of a sudden the court, without reanalyzing the factor, simply says $5,000. Now on its face, when I was first reading it, it sure seems to be heavy on the proportionality. In other words, I get the impression if the award was $15,000, then the original $15,540 would have remained the same. How do we not, in analyzing that, Ms. Brecky, or what am I missing from the order and the parts, especially in light of Judge Hooten's point where the judge just randomly says without any legal analysis, or support says there'll be no coverage for attorney's fees for the trial and post-trial, and then reduces it down to near what the judgment was. On its face, it almost strikes me as an abuse of discretion with little analysis. Can you lead me in a different direction by looking at the same order and tell me where I'm missing it?
Yes, Your Honor. So first I would just say that proportionality is far from the only thing that the district court relied on. And we can see all the other things that it relied on throughout the order, how it expressly considered each of these factors and determined most of them weighed towards the respondents. But then I would point Your Honor towards Asp v. O'Brien and Bloomington Electric, in which both of those cases, appellate courts they found that the district court abused their discretion solely because the amount of the lien recorded was small in relation to the fee award. And that those are the cases where courts have found an abuse of discretion are cases where the attorney's fees were not in relation to the damages awards. And here the district court ensured that those fees were in relation to the damages awards as required by ASP and by Bloomington Electric. And it's clear that the attorney's fees requested by appellant are far in excess of the damages award, more so than in any of these other cases, such as ASP for Bloomington Electric, Northwest Wholesale Lumber, and Southside Plumbing v. Plord. In some of those cases, even where the district court awarded fee awards that were similar to the damages awards, such as here, the $5,000 versus $4,400, the appellate courts found that that was too much in relation to the damages award. So certainly here where it's nine times that amount, the district court would be abusing its discretion if it had allowed $39,000 or even $15,000. Did that answer your question?
It did, thank you.
You're welcome. Another thing I wanted to point out in response to some of Mr. Dwyer's points is that I think he said that the court didn't say for each of the factors that these are the facts in the record that I am relying on. I believe that generally the court did do so and did point out facts in the record that supported the nine Jadwin factors. But even if and where the court didn't do so, it's not an abuse of discretion if the facts in the record do support those factors, if the court didn't lay each of those facts out. And that comes from Automated Billing Components, Inc. v. New Horizon Homes, which said that even if the court didn't lay out its specific findings out at all, if the evidence in the record supports the award, then the court does not abuse its discretion. So I just wanted to point that out.
Ms. Dwyer, or Ms. Brecky, I will go back to a comment that you did make in answer to my question. You referenced that a court would abuse discretion if not reducing. I wonder your basis for that, given the huge discretion to a court. So in other words, is there any, since there's no case law, I think Mr. Dwyer was asked that question where there was a greater amount. Would you agree, though, that in and of itself would not be a abuse of discretion if a court awarded a greater amount? And in this case, the court explained how it reduced to $15,540. And even though it was over three times the perhaps almost four times the actual judgment amount, if it goes through the Jadwin factors, would it also not be true that we would affirm that as not an abuse of discretion as long as all those factors are considered properly?
That's a good question, Your Honor. In ASP and Bloomington Electric, I know that the award wasn't equal or greater than the judgment, but it was closer to equal than what the appellate courts eventually limited the award to. I don't know off the top of my head if in those cases, if the Court of Appeals in Bloomington and the Supreme Court in ASP, if they stated that the district court actually went through the Jadwin analysis. I think they did. But because in both of those cases, the court found the fee award disproportionate to the damages award, they said that it was an abuse of discretion regardless.
Perhaps just to ask it a little slightly different way, and Mr. Dwyer points this out in his briefing, it would seem that regardless of the amount, the attorney would have an obligation to at least exercise some amount of discovery, even if not as much as you might in a $300,000 case, in order to properly represent a client, to be prepared for trial and so forth. And so it seemed in this case, the court suggested that no discovery was warranted. And do you agree that that would be a proper role for an attorney, regardless of the amount, to exercise the discretion to no discovery? And that's follow up on my last question. It would seem to me that under the statute, reasonable fees may be more, and that would not be prohibited or be considered an abuse of discretion if it's more than the judgment award.
Your Honor, I'm not, sorry, I'm just gathering my thoughts. I'm not certain if there's a situation where no discovery would be appropriate versus more discovery. What I would say is I think the district court was in the best position to make that determination of how much discovery was necessary in this case, because they are the fact finder and they were the person evaluating it on the ground.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Your Honor, just to sum up, I would say that this was not a case where the appellant had a $50,000 claim or they only ended up recovering $4,000. Appellant's best result here was always around $4,000. Most lawyers could handle a claim of that size on their own, and most law firms would not staff a case of that size with 12 people. Even if the amount in dispute was 10 times the $4,000, cases like Ask V. O'Brien and Bloomington Electric suggest that appellant's requested fees would not be proportional to the award here. Do you have any other questions for me?
It appears not. You may sum up.
Thank you. That's all I have.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Brecky. Mr. Dwyer, you have an opportunity for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, while this may have only been a $4,000 case, the respondents acted like it was a $50,000 case. It takes two to trial. And as set out in the record and in various briefings, there was a lot that the respondents did, such as refusing to answer discovery, failing to respond for months at a time, and including demanding discovery on their own, formal discovery as part of the process, that extended the costs. This was not a case of blackguard attorneys in Dickensian fashion sitting and pining upon the poor Walkers. The Walkers raised a lot of factual issues, and it would frankly be malpractice for an attorney in that position not to serve discovery to obtain the factual basis for defenses. And that does not speak to why the court then, as Your Honor noted, simply then said you cannot recover fees for trial or post-trial motions. A trial was necessary to secure a result. Even if the district court said discovery wasn't necessary, it doesn't explain why trial wouldn't be necessary or why post-trial motions wouldn't be.
Could I ask you a question? Are you really just asking us to reweigh these factors and come up with a different result? And the reason I ask that is because I went through the factors and I noticed that two of them are neutral. One is in favor of your client, but it looks like the Walkers in going through each factor that it weighed in their favor on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 factors. At the end of this argument, aren't we just basically, aren't you asking us to just reweigh this and come up with a different result?
No, Your Honor, I'm asking you to direct the district court to apply those factors. Of those six that you referenced, four of those were essentially proportionality over and over again. The district court said, well, because of the amount in controversy, this kind of work isn't necessary. Because of the amount in controversy, they should have done informal discovery. I don't know what informal discovery is, if we're being honest. I don't know if it leads to admissible evidence in trial. I'm not sure what was meant by informal discovery, but the rules of civil procedure allow you to serve interrogatories and discovery requests, and that was necessary here. So we're not asking the court to reapply the factors. We're asking the court to direct the district court to apply the factors without simply falling back on proportionality, and also to apply those factors to the trial fees and the post-trial motion fees, which the district court plainly did not do in this order. And Your Honor, there's been a lot of discussion about ASP v. O'Brien and Bloomington Electric Co. I would direct this court to one of its more recent holdings, which is 650 North Main Association v. Frauenschuh Incorporated, 885 Northwest 2nd 478, as well as the Minnesota Supreme Court's decision in Green v. BMW of North America, LLC, 826 Northwest 2nd 530. And in 650 North Main Association, this court considered whether the rules from ASP O'Brien should be controlling, and in fact said that the Minnesota Supreme Court, in citing Green, has stated in conducting a lodestar analysis, there is no dollar value proportionality rule. Rather, and I quote, the amount involved is merely one factor among a host of others that the district court is to consider in awarding reasonable attorney's fees. The district court, while it paid lip service to all nine of the Jadwin factors, really did not consider them as a host. It looked solely to proportionality to resolve most of those factors. And then after conducting that, after saying, is in paragraph 27 of the order, addendum 8, page 18, the court said, after applying the factors, the total allowed by the court, therefore, is 15,540. And after allowing that amount, cut it down again without basis or reason. This isn't us nitpicking any particular item that the district court said. This is the district court just cutting out huge swaths of fees without justification in law or fact. And for that, we'd ask that the court reverse the district court order.
Mr. Dwyer, one more question, and of course, take your time to answer. In your view, is the proportionality concept, is it built in to one or more of those nine so-called Jadwin factors, or does it stand separate and apart from those nine factors? And if the which factor is it?
It is part and parcel of the consideration of the amount in controversy and the results obtained. I believe that it is built into that Jadwin factor.
Your fifth factor, results obtained, is amount in controversy the same or a different one? But that's the fourth factor, value of interest involved?
Yes, Your Honor, factors four and five. Although I would say factor four is probably the most direct import of how much are we dealing with, but then five is also relevant.
And in five,
simply, Your Honor,
five results obtained, the district court said it weighs in favor of plaintiff, perhaps because you recovered 100% of what you sought, perhaps.
That is correct, Your Honor. Have I answered your question, Your Honor, or would you like me to address another point? Thank you. Again, we ask the court to reverse and remand.
Thank you to both of you for your arguments. The case is submitted, and the court will issue its opinion within 90 days.